Justice Berger, and the people. My name is Ted Kachak. I was born in Stebbins. I'm enrolled in Stebbins Native Corporation, and I'm also a tribal member. I went to high school here at Nome Belts, went to Lathrop High School, graduated in Lathrop, and thereafter I went to Alaska Methodist University and studied there for three and a half years. And since that time, I've acquired a file cabinet of references, titles, whatever there is, and you name it, I've been there. And back in 1970, while all this was happening, the Land Claims Act was studied. I was at Alaska Pacific University, which was Alaska Methodist at the time. And at the time, I became aware that land claims was going to become history. During that time, I studied with Fred Big Jim, Robert Goldberg, Guy Martin, who is also an associate professor at AMU. And during this time, land claims bill was considered in Congress. There was a protest, which I was participating at the Sidney Lawrence Auditorium. And the protest, the placard I was carrying was a $2 billion land steal, which is probably exaggeration. But nevertheless, I had opposed the land claims ever since they initiated. I've had knowledge that I thought I wouldn't be useful in the future, and that was college, going to university and to the college. Since then I've had titles that I mentioned earlier. Being the president of the village corporation, the president of the IRA, the mayor, the manager for tribal council, manager for Stebbins Native Corporation, and list goes on. We've had problems in working plans to develop our village, because everybody was speaking different tongues. And we've had meetings about six meetings a month and different organizations. And I tell you, it becomes a headache after a while. Every time you sit in, you change your hat because you're the mayor. And then you go to a corporation, you change your hat again, you're vice president or member, and it's very hard to deal with multi or several organizations that are trying to do the same thing. And I'm always opposed to this act, Land Claims Act, because I felt that it was not just act because of the problems that we're facing now. The corporation board consists of almost illiterate people. Now, five or six or even less, four people might have some business background, but The others, they don't know about business, they don't know about management, they don't know accounting, bookkeeping. You have, when you have a corporation, a viable corporation who's a profit, then you need skilled people that are responsible, that could make business decisions as board members, and which are in our villages, this is not true. But what boils down to now is that it's creating a lot of problem, animosity, jealousy, you name it. It's happening every day. So I guess I'll conclude right out here before I start to wander off somewhere else. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
My name is Caleb Pangari. I am president of Quark Incorporated, a regional nonprofit native corporation. And before I start, Your Honor, if I may, I would like to remind all those who are listening to get out and vote today as this municipal election day. In general, the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act was good to the regional nonprofits. To give a little historical perspective, Quark Incorporated originally started as Inupiaq Development Corporation back in 1967 with a grant from the Office of Economic Opportunity. From those early years, it operated as Inupiaq Development Corporation until 1970, when it was changed to Bering Straits Native Association to assist in the implementation of the Claim Settlement Act and also to assist in the passage of the Claim Settlement Act. In 1973, it was formally incorporated into what is now called Quark Incorporated, a tribal association or a tribal organization. As I said earlier, the Claim Settlement Act was good to the nonprofits. One, it gave us legitimacy to work as a tribal organization. Second, it gave us a set boundary to work within a particular region, although the boundaries had already been pretty much established by the nonprofits prior to the passage of the Claim Settlement Act, but there had not been a formal boundary set for the nonprofits. And third, we organized in a statewide manner to address mutual problems and concerns. And I think this has, in essence, assisted in the solving some of the problems that faced Alaska Natives prior to the Claim Settlement Act and afterwards. The Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act was not an easy act to work with. It was not simple. It was a very complex legislation that required lots of months of work. During the early years, tremendous amount of work had to be done. Enrollment of members, land selections, certification of villages, incorporation of villages, election of 19B reserves versus participating in the Claim Settlement Act, Native allotments, selection or identification of historical and cemetery sites, learning the process of electing directors and participating as a corporations, 7I issues, boundaries. Boundaries were disputed between the regional corporations and the village corporations, and those had to be settled before everything was worked out between all the Native corporations. Easements had to be identified. There was disputes on navigable waters, identification of easements. All this and more was done with limited funding, limited manpower, limited skills, and limited time. Of course, some things fell through the cracks. Some people did not get enrolled. Some lands that probably should have been selected were not selected. And Some things were litigated for years before they were finally resolved, and some are still pending. There are certain provisions of the Act that probably should not have been accepted by the Native leaders during the negotiation of the claim settlement. No sane businessman would have accepted the provisions of 7I, in which you had to share 70% of your revenues with some other corporation. I don't think ARCO or Exxon would want to share 70% of the revenues with Shell Oil or Exxon or Mobil. Although the efforts to share these things with other corporations was laudable, I think that in the end it'll provide or doom some of the efforts to develop some of the minerals and the assets that the regional corporations may have on their lands. The 14C reconveyances, the 1,280 acres that has to be reconveyed to the cities, should not have been taken out of the 44 million acres. Never in the history of the United States is there ever a guarantee that a city or a future city is guaranteed acreage of land for municipal purposes or expansion. But this is something that was required of the native settlements or the native communities. Yesterday I mentioned the extinguishment of Aboriginal hunting and fishing rights, that this extinguishment should not have been accepted. It is surprising, though, that after the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, there were several acts that were passed by the Congress that either provided for protection or provided for provisions of subsistence hunting and fishing for Alaska Natives. The Marine Mammal Protection Act of 1972 provided for exclusive exemption of Alaska Natives to continue to hunt marine mammals. The ANILCA, or the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, provides for priority subsistence. The act that, one of the previous acts that Vern mentioned earlier, the Reindeer Act of 1937, is one of the few acts that provides for trust relationship between the federal government and Alaska Natives, in that the resource, in this case the reindeer, is placed in trust in the federal government for the use of by Alaska Natives for their benefit. And that act was never repealed. The ANILCA also provided for establishment of regional councils, in that they make recommendations to the boards of fish and game, or boards of game and fisheries in this case, to provide for subsistence priority, or proposals that will provide for subsistence priorities. The migratory bird treaties that have been negotiated with Russia and Canada provides for spring subsistence hunting of waterfowl, although these have yet to be ratified by the Senate. Some people erroneously think that the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act repealed the IRA or the traditional governments, when in fact there's no mention of tribal governments in the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. There has been subsequent acts after the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act that either expands or give additional authority to tribal governments in Alaska. The Indian Self-Determination and Education Act of 1974 provides for additional powers to IRAs to contract for federal services. The Indian Child Welfare Act of 1976, I may be wrong on some of the years, provides for additional powers for the tribal governments. The Indian Tribal Governmental Status Act of 1970 or 1982 also provides for additional powers to the IRAs. So these acts lend to the existence and continuation of tribal governments in Alaska. And I think that should be noted, that the tribal governments were never extinguished by the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act. I think it would be erroneous to think that there's been nothing but problems with the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, when there, in fact there has been some significant benefits from the settlement. One, today and throughout today's testimony and also throughout the state, there's been press statements that the Claim Settlement Act has torn apart the Alaska Natives, when in fact it has all pulled us together. It has unified us both statewide and regionally to address issues of concerns and issues that we need to speak on. It has increased employment among Alaska Natives. Third, we have become more politically involved in politics, in state and local politics. More of our children are seeking higher education, not only for employment purposes, but to come back and work for their people. We've become more aware of the importance of our Eskimo heritage and of efforts to preserve them for future generations. And I think that this is something that is very important that has come out of the Claims Settlement Act, that we have revived our efforts to preserve Eskimo heritage. I think there's one more area that our people should be aware of, and the Village Corporation, particularly in this case, should be more aware of. And that's the Alaska Coastal Management Act of 1977. Under this act, the Bering Strait Coastal Resource Service Area will determine the uses and non-uses on the private lands and state lands in this region and identify what they call AMDAs, Areas Meriting Special Attention. These areas would be especially protected areas in which no development will take place. Once this plan is approved by the Alaska Coastal Policy Council, this plan will be implemented by state agencies, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Department of Natural Resources, Community and Regional Affairs, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Department of Environmental Conservation. And they, in turn, in essence, will manage native lands. And this is something that the Village Corporation should be quite aware of and work with the Bering Strait Coastal Resource Service Area in making sure that the lands, the plans that are developed are compatible with your needs and your desires. I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify, and I hope that these hearings and the results from these hearings will be a benefit to us and also to the Native people around the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pungawi.
I should, at this stage, say that the shareholder survey carried out in by Sitnasuik Native Corporation and published in June 1984 has been turned over to the inquiry. I've read this preliminary analysis of the survey of shareholders' wishes and preferences, and it's very interesting, and we will make it part of the record of this commission. I should also express the thanks of the commission to Kuwarik Incorporated and to the Sitnasuik Native Corporation for the help they've given the commission in making its visit to this region possible. Well, does anybody else want to say something today before he or she goes out to vote?
Good afternoon. I'm John Wai, originally from Suwunga, but I lived in here in Nome now. Some persons say they're talking for themselves or myself. I'm talking for the people, for our subsistence lifestyle. I'm sorry I'm not really educated. I didn't even finish my education in elementary due to the lifestyle we used to have way back. My dad pulled me out from education. Subsistence lifestyle was more important than educating me in the school. In those years, we didn't even have a state law, or we didn't know anything about that while I was growing. I'm really opposed to this Alaska Clean Settlement Act. It came to us just like an avalanche to us. We're stuck in the Alaska Clean Settlement Act. We can't go any further. We can't live as we used to live, subsistent way of life. We should have lived, probably given us a tribe that we used to live, instead of this Alaska Clean Settlement Act. We would have lived that we used to hunt with no limit, or time to fish, and so forth. Right now, even for our subsistence fishing, Fish and Game gave us time limit, three times a week, so and so hours. On some real calm days, there's a closure that we can't fish. When the weather gets bad, there's an open season that we couldn't fish. We should have been fishing in the subsistence lifestyle. Whenever we want to fish in the calm weather and so forth. And we used to limit ourselves for our need to get enough for the household. We stopped hunting or fishing. Now Fish and Game limit everything for us. Same thing with the statehood. We didn't know about the statehood. Our legislators put it in the ballot. We voted for it without knowing what will happen to us. We should have been a territorial. I think that would have done better for us in the way of our lifestyle. Now, they have given us 100 shareholders, but what we get from out of it as individuals? Our board of directors are spending that 100 shares we're supposed to get. They get big salaries. They spend it 13 years. We don't get nothing. Only for first 3 years we get little money. After that, no more. They give us campsite, so many acres, but still leased under to us by our corporation. It's going to be 1991. When will we get it? Instead of 1991, we should go back to a tribe, our own tribe, subsistent way of life. This Alaska Claim Settlement Act is not doing nothing good for us, just limiting us. We're trapped. We're trapped under avalanche from this corporation, this settlement act. Now they're trying to educate people for this 1991. That's where our 100 shares money is going for. Board of directors and us shareholders, we don't get nothing. No wonder they're gaining 50 pounds. We don't gain nothing as a shareholder. So I grew up strictly in subsistence way of life. I'm not educated. I grew up to be a hunter, trapper, whatever. So I'm strictly against 100% for this Alaska Settlement Act. If 1991 comes, they should give us our own tribe instead of... I'm opposed to this 1991 coming up, that we should keep our land instead of selling it to outsiders. We have to keep it. We should keep it. And our children don't get nothing that was born after 1971. Our board of directors should work for that out from our 100 shares. Try and involve them with us. They're left out from us. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Bridget. I'm Leela Oman. I've been talking a lot ever since this issue came up. But I don't agree with people that are against statehood. And I don't agree, no matter how much we disagree on this and on that. And this, what we call a headache, we must go through. What do we want to do? Go back to territorial days again, where we were forgotten? Remember, even our state flower is forget-me-not. We did not have voice in Congress. Now we have voice in Congress. When did that happen? When Alaska became a state? Before that time, we were nothing. Nobody heard us. No matter how much we rumble, nobody heard us. In 1958, just around that time when we were fighting for, when we were trying to become a state, how many of us were old enough to pull for the statehood? Just how many? Just few of us in this room. I went on the radio and I went on TV pulling for the statehood. And I was working down in jail, making $570 a month, and that was big money at that time. Then, when we became a state, I went down to $400 a month. I went home, and my husband said to me, "Now, do you still like statehood?" "Oh, yes, I do, because I pulled for it. That is my right. As an individual, even within my family, that was my right." And we have enjoyed many things after Alaska became a state. There's housing, and our children had more chances at education. And for the first time, we were heard in Congress. And for the first time, we started voting who we wanted for the president. I remember an old lady down at East End. Her name was named, that she is now going to be voting for the president. And her grandchild heard about it. And he went home and congratulated her. And she said, "What? And what is a president anyway?" Well, you see what ignorant people we were at that time. Now, as the time goes, we have a chance to know what to pull for. And this goes to show land claims, a lot of people think of as just a malarkey, but it isn't. It gave us something to work on. It gave us identity. And remember, while we were in territorial days, how many of us were Eskimos? How many of us were honestly Eskimos? There were just the only handful of us that will come out and be proud to say we are Eskimos. And after the land claims passed, I started knowing a lot of Eskimos that I didn't even know were Eskimos. Not only around among Eskimos, but among Indians also. There's a story of a family, a white family, that had lived up the hill all these years. And when land claims came through, by golly, they were Indians. And look what we went through, all of that. And then the way we were here, the jobs were very limited, very, very limited. Because this area was being run by people that were making homemade laws. Very bad homemade laws. I remember coming to Nome here. There were two kinds of people here. Now we are united. We work side by side with people, with white people. We forgot all about homemade laws because Alaska has real good, strong government now. And you must be an Alaskan in order to have those jobs. But at that time, the people that were holding these big jobs up here brought in their own relatives from way out there and filled in those jobs. That's what we saw. And also in Nome here, there is one woman sitting right here, Irene Green. There is a story about her. She was hired as a native, working in Nome here for the first time as a native. And I am so proud to talk about that. I don't know whether that is true or not, but that's the way Nome was. When you were an Eskimo, you just went out, no matter what kind of good education you had, you went out and scrubbed. And you went out and served people that can give you 50 cents a day. That is a big laugh right now. But now, when Alaska became a state, and now we are united as people on account of land claims, we have something to work on, something to worry about, and that is life. I just cannot think of a person with no worries, no nothing to talk on, no nothing to see somebody about as a living person. I want to keep on learning because one more year I will be, well, I shouldn't say it, but anyway, I want to keep on going. And I have worked, I remembered working for teachers when I was 13 years old, and I am still working. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Oman.
Mr. Berger, I called you Thomas Berger this morning at the Senior Citizens, and I just found out this afternoon that you are Judge Thomas Berger. So I have a story for you. My name is Myrtle Johnson. I was born in Golovin, Alaska. I came to Nome for high school. I married before I graduated. I moved outside. I went to business college in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Ypsilanti, Michigan. The story that I have for you, Judge Berger, my father is 82 years old, and my mother and dad used to live in Bluff many, many years ago as children. There was an Eskimo man down there that had a house, and the ground was very rich with gold. In the wintertime, they would even take a barrel of water and some ground and put it in a corner of the building, the cabin. And when they needed to go to the store for food, why, they'd take the pan and they'd wash out a teaspoon of gold and then go over to the store and buy whatever they needed. Well, this old Eskimo man had a cabin, and all the Caucasian people that came to Bluff, the miners or seeking for gold, wore their old clothes, and they grew long hair and beards, and they knew that this old man, Eskimo man's, the ground around his house was very extra rich. So they kept digging around his house until finally his house toppled over. And somebody told him, well, why don't you go to Nome and tell the judge in Nome what's happening here? So he went to Nome, and he went into the judge, and he gave the judge all their names, and he waited a few days. These men were called in. Then he was told to come down to court. Well, these men, in the meantime, when they came into Nome, they went and took showers, they cut their hair, they shaved off their beards, and they put on their black suits with a white shirt and necktie, and they came in and they sat in the courtroom. And the Eskimo man was brought up, and the judge asked him, have any of these guys, were any of these guys here the ones that dug the ground out from underneath your house? And he looked at them, and he didn't recognize a soul. I just wanted you to have that story. I am a very money-conscious person. I like to live on a budget, and I like to see my budget work. So a number of us were talking after listening to some of the testimony yesterday, and we wondered about the Alaska Review Commission. Where do the dollars come from for you to travel and your budget and so forth? Is it U.S. dollars, Canadian dollars, or what dollars?
U.S. dollars, and the Inuit Circumpolar Conference is raising the money for our work. And the when we travel to each region, we usually find that there is in-kind help made available to us. For instance, Kowarik has made Mary Miller available to help organize the meetings. And Sitna Suik is allowing us to stay in an apartment here that I believe it owns. It says Exxon on the door, but I...
Then it's you, and then it's actually U.S. dollars that's going to be raised by the ICC?
Yeah.
Okay, and the Alaska Review Commission makes up just you?
Yes, and we have a small staff of about four or five.
Okay. No Canadian dollars are used?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. One day before the Land Claims Act came into being or was even thought of, Tommy and I went to an A&B meeting. And that particular night, I was wearing a coat and it had a few buttons missing, and I was really feeling poorly. And we had an old car. We had kids that were coming along that were going to be going into college, so I felt pretty poor. But by golly, when I left that A&B meeting that night and I heard Jerome Trigg tell about this land claims settlement act that they were working on, and why, I thought, man, life, someday we're going to be rich. Well, the land claim settlement was the AFN people had a meeting in Anchorage. I wasn't able to attend, but I had some family that attended that meeting. And I was told that a member of Bering Straits Native Corporation, an officer at that time, was the one who made the motion to accept the Alaska Native Land Claims Act. There was a second to that motion, and a woman from Nome, I don't know her name, if I did, I'd say it, got up and she said, I haven't had enough time. I can't vote on this as yet. It was so thick, I haven't had enough time to look it through and understand it at all to cast my vote. Joe Upikson from Barrow, he got up and my daughter told me that he spoke and he had tears in his eyes. He was begging the people not to vote for this Land Claims Act at that time, that they didn't realize what they were going to be getting into, and was discouraging them to vote for the Land Claims Act. Well, it passed. I was one of the organizers when it all came into being. And when it came time for a board to be selected, I wasn't selected. I was one of the incorporators at the time. A board was selected, and then they had a sample election in which I was elected and I was seated. I felt very strongly about my position on the board, so I went up to the regional corporation and I asked for the special conditions that came with the first $500, $500,000. There was a special condition that came with that first $500,000 to the region. I couldn't get a copy from Bering Straits. So when I went to Kotzebue, I asked for that, for the special conditions from NANA, and they gave me a copy. On that very first page of that special conditions that came, it reads in the last paragraph at the bottom of the page that none of this money was supposed to be used to organize a village that had less than 25 people in it when the census was taken in 1970. We had five villages in our region that they went ahead and spent money on to organize so that they could be a certified village. It took years to do it, several years to do it, but they became certified villages. One thing that I think a lot of our people had problems with, and that was the accumulative voting. For years, I couldn't understand it, and I'm sure the people in the villages had a difficult time understanding the accumulative voting. We had a board at that time, and our board were people from the villages that did not have any business experience. And we heard our chairman today say, chairman of Bering Straits, tell us that they still are not making a profit. But you can't have a corporation paying out per diem and consulting fees if you aren't making a profit. Your money is going to disappear. And when 1991 comes, and we have to pay taxes on our land, we are not going to have the money to keep our land. And I hope that when this happens, that those of us who have really worked hard in our lifetime to make a savings, they will give us a chance to buy this land before it is taken over by the government. I take back being an incorporator of the Bering Straits Native Corporation. I was an incorporator of Sitnasauk Native Corporation. And at the time that we were organizing Sitnasauk, I remember the days when I was a girl and I would come in from the village of Golovin, and our theater was divided. They had the Eskimos upstairs, they had the white people on one side, and they had the mixed blood on the other side. Because I was so fair, I was sitting with my sisters, my brothers, my cousins. The lady with the flashlight would come over and try to move me over to the other side. And so when we organized then Sitnasauk, it was difficult for some of our people to have Caucasian people who were knowledgeable of our area and the ground and the land to come in and work with us, because we still had that feeling that they were going to get the better of us. But now that I'm older, I don't judge a man by his color. I judge a man by his heart and what he shows me he can do. And I think that instead of having this feeling that they're going to take something from us, we must be open. We know when to say no. We know when to chase them away. But we must be open to them and gain what we can from them. My subsistence question was answered at the senior meeting this morning, because I was hearing on the radio under subsistence, by 1991, we no longer could live our subsistence way of living. And the reason why, Judge Berger told me this morning, that if we sell out to outsiders, sell our shares to the outsiders, and they gain control of our land, then that's when we will lose our subsistence way of living. As long as we hang on to our shares, or we pass them on to our families, we will always have our land. I have never felt very strongly or thought too much about the shares and the children that have been born since the Land Claims Act. I feel that, this is my feeling, I feel that the shares that the family has should be held together. The families should sit down and sort of like have a conference so that everybody knows we have this, how shall we vote it? Who shall we vote for? And draw the family unit together and there make your decision as to who we're going to vote for and hang on to our shares. When one of the family passes away, it's divided, it goes back to the family, it stays within the family. I know there's a lot of hard feelings. I know that since the Land Claims Act has come into being, we have a lot of our people employed at Sitnasauk, at the regional corporation, Huwarak. But in our villages, it's our little villages. They don't have enough money to actually have an office, some of our villages. It has been our oil in the state that was discovered that has given us what we have. If we hadn't discovered, if they hadn't discovered oil in our state, we would not be as rich as we are. We wouldn't have what we have today, even with the land claim settlement, because so much of it left our region.